Welcome to the Software Testing Podcast, sponsored by ASTQB. ASTQB, the American Software Testing Qualifications Board, is the U.S. board for the internationally recognized ASTQB Software Testing Certification. Our mission is to promote professionalism in software testing in the United States. We are pleased to present these podcasts as a service to the software testing community and invite you to learn more about ASTQB at astqb.org. Our guest today is Randy Rice. Randy is a leading author, speaker, consultant, and practitioner in the field of software testing and software quality. Randy has over 38 years of experience in building and testing software projects in a variety of environments and has authored over 70 training courses in software testing, security testing, and software engineering. Randy holds many ASTQB certifications, including all three core advanced certifications, the Advanced Security Tester Certification, Certified Mobile Tester, and Certified Agile Tester. Randy is the chair of the ASTQB Advanced Security Tester Working Party, which created the 2016 Advanced Security Tester syllabus. Randy founded Rice Consulting Services in 1990 and continues to train, mentor, and consult with testers and test managers worldwide. We're pleased to have Randy Rice join us. In this podcast, we examine why, with all the tools we have for information security, breaches still happen on a frequent basis. You have great perspective as an author of the security tester syllabus for ASTQB certification. And there's this tremendous knowledge base. And beyond that, there are so many tools that we have for information security. So with all of the seemingly millions of dollars that have been poured into the tools and the training and everything else that we have, it begs the question, why do we still have security breaches on a frequent basis?
Well, that's a really good question. That's probably the number one question that I get about security. And right now, I have to kind of answer it in terms of what's going on right now. Because in the past, it was a matter of people hacking into systems and breaking encryption and that kind of thing, or just not following procedural kind of things. But at this point in time, the biggest reason is careless human actions. I'm not even going to say error, but I'm just going to say careless human actions by clicking on malicious links in an email, downloading an attachment that looks legitimate, but contains malware. And the implication behind all of this is that there's a significant rise right now in the method of spear phishing. A lot of people are familiar with the phishing emails, where they're fairly easily determined. When you look at a typical phishing email, you can say, oh, this is fake because the words they use or the spelling is bad or something like that. A few of them are pretty good, but still, if you approach it with due suspicion, you're kind of going to know. But with spear phishing, what they do is they take it up a couple of notches and they identify people in the organization. They know what their role is. They know what department they're in. And it's a very, very well-crafted email that, let's say, would be to an accounts payable person, and it may say, here's my invoice for the work that I did for the last 2 weeks, and please let me know if you have any questions about it. Well, if that accounts payable person is kind of going through a stack of invoices or whatever, they may just say, oh, okay, this is one of our vendors, and click on the attachment, and there you go. That's all it takes sometimes for people to gain total network access. And so many of the biggest data breaches that we've seen so far. When they do the root cause analysis, that's exactly how they happened, through those kind of spear phishing attempts. And there's some debate about, is that really a hack, or is that just the accidental release of information? But I consider it a form of an attack, that people are not aware of what they're doing, but it's the human factors there that tend to, right now at least, fuel the breaches.
So as a security tester, you're really thinking even beyond the code, but to the, well, and I suppose it's true in any testing, you're looking for the silly things that human beings can do with given a particular interface. But this may be even broader, it sounds like, that you're looking for how do we protect ourselves against, human intervention that even seemingly can't be protected from the, via the code itself. Does that make sense?
Yeah, there are things that people do. For example, there are some, if you can envision this, there are some fake phishing emails that people will send out to their own organization just to see who clicks and who doesn't. And if you click on it, then you get maybe an invitation to retrain in the security procedures, which is a pretty strong detriment for many people. But I mean, it's like going through the safety talk all over again. So there are some safeguards that can be built in if people are proactive about it, but it's like one of these things that it's the multi-layer approach that you really need to have in place, and that there's elements of secure coding that, yes, if we don't have the coders thinking about the right things to do, and by the way, there's quite a long list, and we actually go through that list in the syllabus of quite a few things that developers need to avoid doing in their coding to create more secure code, and things that they should be doing also. But then there's the procedural side, and this is another area that a lot of companies just totally don't think about, and those are the procedural controls. Now, way back when I first got into testing, procedural controls were seen as an important job of testing, because that's how the auditors would make sure that no one was committing fraud and those kind of things. And over the years, procedural controls have just kind of been relegated to these things that are out there, but very few people read or pay attention to. But when it comes to security, they're extremely important. Take, for example, the case of a system administrator who might be disgruntled, and they decide, okay, well, I'm on my way out. Before I get fired, I'm going to do a little damage. Of course, it's highly illegal, and they could probably figure out who did it. But there are some procedural controls that could be put in place where the powers of a system admin would be limited unless authorized by another system admin, kind of thing. So there are just all these different lines of defenses that can be employed. But here's the number one thing, Dave. Most companies, they can't tell you if any of that is working or not. And the reason for it is they've never tested it. They say, oh, okay, yeah, we got the firewall, we have the encryption, we have the procedural controls, we have the training of our users, but are they working? We don't know. We have an incident response plan. Will it work? We don't know, because it's never been tested. And so this is what I'm the evangelist of right now, that companies need to know if they work, if all these things are actually working. And I failed to mention this earlier, but I've kind of come up with a little analogy and a model of this, of your own home, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Very, very few people would just check their locks at night, perhaps once a month. I mean, I go around the house every night checking the locks on the doors, making sure that, Yes, I've actually locked all the doors because sometimes we'll let our dogs out in the, you know, before we all go to bed, and sometimes I have forgotten to lock the doors, or
Sure.
at least one of the doors, but I always check the locks. And it'd be also silly to think that the alarm monitoring company that we use, I would only test my alarm going off once a month or once a year, or how long does it take the alarm company to call me back? You know, now sometimes I accidentally set it off and I find that thing out. But if we approach security with that mindset of just periodically testing things, then that's bad too, because so many things happen. You have to take also a continual mindset of doing these kind of tests. And I know that makes the challenge much, much harder. Some of it can be automated, but at least take that mindset of checking the locks, you know, of your organization, making sure that the big controls are still working on a very, very frequent basis. And if people get nothing else out of this particular interview, I would hope that they would take away that little piece of perspective there, that this is something, it's just not once and done kind of thing. It's something that you do on a continuous basis.
No, that's really great insight. You're right. Who would check their locks on their house once a month? It would make no difference because in your day-to-day activity, that's not really a relevant measure. No, that's brilliant. I
Right.
love it.
Well, thanks. And I'll give you one other thing too, that we've had before I lived here in Oklahoma City, that there's been this rash of car thefts. And, you know, a lot of people now have outdoor security cameras out on their garage or whatever, out of their driveway. And what the security cameras are showing is that the people aren't locking their cars. And so they have these security cameras up there, and the thieves, they see them, just open the door of the car, you know, hot wire it or whatever. And some brands are a lot easier to do this with than others. And they get a great high definition image video of their car being stolen. So what the thieves do, they're going to go to the unlocked cars. They're going to go to the ones that don't have any protections. And so in your companies, the companies that have the stronger security, most hackers are going to give up and move on. Now, I can't say that for certainty, because some hackers and attackers are going to just keep trying until they find something, because the value is so great. But for a lot of the more casual attackers, I'll just say, they're too lazy. They know that there are a lot of places that don't have the good security, so they'll just move on to the next easy target.
No, I think that's a great insight. In fact, we've seen that just by checking various security logs and whatnot, in that once something starts to happen, it seems to, you know, it attracts other hackers. You know, it's almost like they put it out in the hotline. Hey, this is now available and this is open and it's an easy place to get into. So everyone else come join me and let's see what we can do here.
That's
Whereas,
exactly.
you see that as well.
Yeah, that's exactly what happens. People are not aware that there are there's what's known as the dark web out there, and there are, as I mentioned earlier, some search engines and things that are specifically designed to identify places with weak or no security. And so it's like, yeah, the word gets out, and it gets out really quickly. And that's really the value of having someone do a penetration test. Now, I need to hasten to say that the security tester syllabus is more than penetration testing. Some people will, you know, they kind of want to know the distinction there. We cover penetration testing. We don't actually have sessions in the training where people actually do penetration testing, but we do cover it as a technique. But you do need the external perspective, and to have someone try to do some reconnaissance on your company and see what they find. And yeah, it can be rather stunning sometimes.
Well, great advice, Randy. I appreciate you taking time on this today.
Well, thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you for joining us for this podcast. We invite you to find more software testing podcasts, webinars, and white papers at www.astqb.org.